Hey everybody, I'm still somewhat alive. The last time I posted about my tiny-ass town that technically doesn't exist was a long time ago. Told you I was gonna help Davis, Langdon, and the other agents, and none of that worked out. Currently residing with a friend in Idaho, while my town is going through some, issues, shall we say? To sum up what has happened over the past 3 weeks or so, this is what Rick and I found out after exploring this situation a bit more. The agency that came to our town, didn't exist. And we have absolutely no clue who Davis and Langdon were working for, or how they knew so much about our town. The eastern half of the United States is pretty... well, it's a pretty broad area. So I know they weren't getting it from my posts here. Also, the hole on Mulberry Lane was basically a portal to hell, and would trigger a Shaun of the Dead situation with all the people who went missing. Our town lost 2,000 residents. And there's no way to get them back. Also, we lost all electricity for the foreseeable future, and my apartment building burned down. So me and Eddie are out west now. Anyway, I figured since some of you guys are somewhat interested in some of the other experiences I've had in my voodoo-ass Twilight Zone town from Satan's butthole, here's what happened with the payphone. Before I found out that the University of Florida didn't know I even existed, and I was working at a grocery store, I had a very chill job at a small entry point to the large state park that stretches about half the unincorporated territory in the north of us, that we are technically part of, according to the rest of the world. Basically, I'd stand in a small hut and wait for people to drive up. If they had a certain license plate, they could get into the state park for free. If not, then they had to pay around $5 for parking, and I'd give them a little ticket to put on their dashboard. This was about a year before shit hit the fan for Rick, and he became totally reclusive. So he helped pull some strings and allow me to get the job, as I wasn't due to be 18 until September. Now, there are definitely some stories that I could tell you about this job, like the bear humanoid hybrid that hunts people for sport, or the supposedly witch that lives alongside a large and fairly well-known mountain. But this isn't about those. This is about the payphone. For some ridiculous reason, the park still has a payphone. It's located right across from my little hut where I spend about 10% of the time letting people into the park and 90% of my time Facebook stalking my classmates. I'm a bored teenager. Shut up. I worked at a park for almost 6 months. And only once did I ever see somebody use that payphone. It was an elderly woman who probably didn't know what a cell phone was, let alone how to use one. However, that phone became a very interesting point in my life, one rainy and foggy July afternoon. I remember that some thrill seekers had come through expecting to go for some whitewater rafting on the valley river that cuts through the park about a mile north of where my entrance was. About 15 minutes later, after they had all chanted woohoo and sped up down that small hill and out of sight, I heard muffled ringing coming from somewhere close. Well, it sure as hell wasn't my cell or any cell phone that existed in 2015. It sounded like an outdated, payphone. My stomach dropped as I glanced across the gravel road. Yeah. The payphone was receiving a call. I let it ring twice more before it went quiet and the sound of rain pattering on the roof and the ground around me continued. I talked to my boss, Bradley Noyer, the next day about what had happened. Bradley kind of shrugged it off and said something along the lines of, "Kid, strange shit happens around here every day. Yesterday, someone heard blaring horns coming from the ground underneath them. I guarantee you that your phone call is not as strange as that." So I kind of shrugged it off, too. Bradley had also lived through a lot of shit, so I took his word for it. It wasn't until the very end of July when I heard the payphone ring once again. It was almost dusk. The last hint of sunlight was disappearing behind one of the larger hills near my entrance to the park, and it was getting somewhat harder to see without any artificial light source. The dim neon over the payphone allowed me to see the jet black phone moving as it rang. I contemplated going over to the other side of the gravel road and picking up the phone, but I had an odd feeling about it. Something deep inside of me told me that if I went over to that phone, I would very much regret it. No, I wouldn't. Now, I would have brushed the occasion off as well, but the phone rang again the next day, and the next day, and the next. About 2 weeks into the payphone ringing again and again, the curiosity ate away at me like rust on a 50-year-old bridge spanning a river. I had taken up to noticing that the phone rang at 8:24 p.m. on the dot. Back when it began constantly ringing, 8:24 meant the sun was almost completely below the horizon. 2 weeks later, it meant almost total darkness. So now, as I'm expecting the phone to begin ringing, I leave the little hut around 8:23 and I head over to the payphone. I loitered there for just a moment, patiently waited for the phone to ring. I was finally going to figure out who was calling and why. I snatched up the phone and put it to my ear. Hello? Hey, who is this? There wasn't a single sound coming from the other end. Hello? Why are you calling? For about 20 seconds, there was nothing but dead air on the other end. Then I heard the tone suggesting that the caller had hung up. Feeling mostly defeated, I hung the phone back up, shuffled back over to the cabin. This became a ritual of mine. I'd answer the phone, I'd get nothing. Then I'd just go back inside the shed and wait until 9 or 10 when somebody else would come in and I'd go home. One night I'd completed this ritual and was shuffling back into the hut when the phone rang once more. I turned around and sprinted over to the other side of the gravel road, nearly took out the phone before I picked it up. Hello? As I tried to hold myself together, I heard a deep and raspy voice say my name on the other end of the line. My full name, first, middle, last. I had a very unusual middle name, to the point where maybe 4 people outside my family knew what it was. I would write what it is, but I don't want to have anything like this happen again. The man, I'm guessing that it's a man, from the deep voice, inhaled through what sounded like clenched teeth and giggled. The giggle made my stomach twist itself into a lead ball, and I felt like all of my organs were about to forcibly remove themselves from my asshole. The man then said the name of my town. And this made me want to throw up. There's not a single person I knew outside of this town actually knew the name of the town. Many locals that actually bothered to come through say to call it Sky Village, which is not the actual name of my town. The voice spoke one more time.
See you soon.
With a click in the tone, the call had been disconnected. I think then was when I vomited on the ground next to the payphone. Before anything else, I scrambled back into the hut and slammed the door shut before I locked it. Then I ducked under the table like a scared 6-year-old just to make sure that nobody else could see me from the outside, as there was no way to cover the window. A new kind of curiosity began eating away at me. I needed to know where the call had come from. Considering I had some decent Wi-Fi in the hut, for teenagers who were bored out of their mind watching the park, I looked up how to trace payphone calls. I knew that I had heard of someone being able to do it way back when I was a kid, so I figured that it was my best bet. And eventually, some Google link told me that if I had hit star 69, I could get an operator to tell me where the last phone call had come from, if the number wasn't blocked. So I pranced across the road one more time and pressed star 69 and waited. The call was coming from a city in northern Idaho. I never heard of this place. Turns out it's actually fairly populated and it's just outside of Spokane. I didn't know anyone from the state of Idaho, at least the last time I checked, and knew that nobody who was basically on the opposite side of the country would know about our hellhole of a town. So how the fuck did they know this? I hung up and wandered back to the hut in an almost zombie-like trance. Again, I locked the door and I rubbed my temples, trying to calmly figure out what to do. Well, Glenn came in to relieve me of my duty around 9 o'clock and asked me why I was so shaken. I told him about the phone. "You answered it?" he asked. I nodded. Glenn looked over at the phone, then back at me. I was concerned with the fact that his normally happy demeanor had seemed to have completely diminished.
What?
Well, you didn't trace the call, did you?
He asked, his voice shaky and shy.
I didn't say anything. I mean, he could read me better than any book. I promise, Glenn, that isn't a poke at your dyslexia. So, he already knew what I was going to say.
In about 5 minutes, you're going to get another call. You need to answer that one. Just talk to him normally. It'll help the police tap it. I was petrified at this. Sure enough, about 5 minutes later, after Glenn had told me that, we heard the phone ring. The ring was not normal. It sounded muffled. Also, it was demonically low in tone. Glenn was back in the hut dialing 911 when I shuffled over to the phone, trying not to blubber like a little bitch before I answered.
Hello?
I stuttered.
The goddamn voice came back on the other end.
Is it you?
I looked back at Glenn, silently begging him to make it all stop. He just nodded at me before I turned back to look at the payphone.
Yes, I said, still holding back my fear.
I can see you, you know,
the man said. He made that terrible childlike giggle again, which made me break out in goosebumps. I had to do some impromptu Kegel exercises to make sure I didn't piss my pants.
You can?
You're the one in the red collared shirt on the shitty payphone, aren't you?
He said.
I swear his voice had gotten deeper as the sentence progressed. From inside the cabin, I heard Glenn shout into the phone, I need you here right now, Sheriff. Shit's gonna get very real, and neither of us are equipped for that.
On the other end of the payphone, I hear,
Tell Glenn to keep quiet.
With that hesitation, I lost my shit and threw the phone back onto its hook before racing back into the hut screaming like an absolute lunatic. Glenn looked at me like a Great Dane had just burst out of my asshole and was singing Sweet Caroline while I slammed the door shut and locked it tight. What the fuck are you doing? He screamed at me. I don't even remember what I said back to him. I don't think they were actually words from any known language, just made up sounds and something along the lines of, Your name on the phone! Before I blacked out for about 10 minutes. When I came to, a police officer asked me what happened to Glenn. I was so confused. But I was also freaked out. Is Glenn dead? I asked.
Well, we don't know. Call from 911 was cut, and I didn't get here until about 2 minutes ago, deputy told me.
I looked up and saw the window to the hut was shattered, and Glenn's water bottle had cracked open and spilled water everywhere. He still wears the t-shirt he got from them. After a brief interrogation where I told them exactly what had happened, had been happening for so long, I went home and tried to get some sleep. Of course, I wouldn't get any sleep at all while my mind ran wild thinking about that goddamn payphone. By the time the sun rose the next day, Glenn was found. Naturally, he was found in a weird location, but this takes the cake for the strangest missing person report my entire life. Glenn was found 60 miles north of our entry to the state park where he worked. He was at a parking area for a somewhat well-known hiking trail off of a state highway. He was completely unharmed, but he had absolutely no clue how he got there. In fact, he only remembered up to the point where he came into the hut and started talking to me. He had no idea that he called 911 to report the guy on the payphone. Glenn and I still hang out sometimes. Usually at nights, when we're both off work and have a minute to spare. We'd go to his apartment, which is tricked out as shit. Just chill for a few hours a week. He's still here even after the mass disappearance of seemingly everyone. However, there's one thing that really gets to me. I had taken notice to a small whiteboard shoved in the corner by the filing cabinet that was only noticeable because of the light reflecting off of a manila folder on the desk. There were always 7 tally marks on that whiteboard. After that night, I counted 8.